I chose my friends carefully. The more politically active black students, the foreign students, the Chicanos, the Marxist professors and structural feminists and punk rock performance poets. We smoked cigarettes, attended classes sparingly, drank beer heavily, and tried drugs enthusiastically. At night in the dorms we discussed neocolonialism, Frantz Fanon, Eurocentrism, and patriarchy. And if the high didn't solve whatever it was that was getting you down, it could at least help you laugh at the world's ongoing folly and see through all the hypocrisy and bullshit.
You cannot get past your future. Why can't you get past your future? You heard me right the first infinity. I often go back to when I was 16, when I choose to recall days when it seemed that I was always being led down the dark hallways of hell into some empty 145th and St. Nick apartment with nothing but a kitchen table and a scale and some dread ready to blast my physical form back into dust. Ashes to ashes, the lust for cash passes when you're starving. Standing on the urine-covered floor of an East Orange, New Jersey jail cell. Can you see yourself there? Ain't nobody here gonna be the next John Gotti. The average black drug dealer is nothing more than a newspaper delivery boy for the status quo, like COINTELPRO inside the US organization, only there to pacify the masses, like the opium war. The only way to ensure that the have-nots will continue to have not is to be sure that the have-nots have at least one thing. Good drugs. And read my lips. Black drug dealers don't never stay rich. Your lawyer don't work for you, you work for your lawyer. And every dime you make that the cops don't take will eventually go straight into your lawyer's pocket. All that cash you stash in your sock getting shot at on the corner for the past 3 years, his profit. All them sweaty $100 bills you dropped in that safe deposit box, you ain't got shit. All three branches of this government rightfully consider you to be their bitch and your community are just John's. And the closest you'll ever get to succeeding is a tax evasion proceeding in which the IRS slides that Rolex off your wrist. It had to end like this. You can't get past your future. Why can't you get past your future? You heard me right. The first infinity. You better get your life together before a bathtub full of flaming gasoline does it for you. The streets are filled with 9mm castrations for overnight crack dealing sensations who might have shot two or three lowlifes but have yet to even contemplate a murder worth investigating. Ain't got no cops on your payroll, ain't got no judges in your pocket, and if listening to hip-hop is making you believe that you're above the law, then you need to hurry up and stop it, because your future was written into the Declaration of Independence. Your life story was discussed in Thomas Jefferson's lodge meetings. Your tragedy was joked about in George Washington's investment club as they sipped on spirits that they traded your great-great-great-great-grandfather for, like the guns that your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather traded him for, like the temporary cash flow that you now trade your time on this earth for. Your past is coming back, your future is even more present, your soul has been on this planet 36 times and you have yet to learn the first lesson. If you're young, black, and male in this civilization, then the proper foundation is education, street smarts, and patience. But most important, you never forsake your principles. I said you never forsake your principles. I said you never forsake your principles. Because if you forsake your principles, you will never get past your future.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
Now, once more, Muammar Gaddafi has a choice. The resolution that passed lays out very clear conditions that must be met. The United States, the United Kingdom, France, and Arab states agree that a ceasefire must be implemented immediately. That means all attacks against civilians must stop. Gaddafi must stop his troops from advancing on Benghazi, pull them back from Ajubia, Misrata and Zawiya, and establish water, electricity, and gas supplies to all areas. Humanitarian assistance must be allowed to reach the people of Libya. Let me be clear. These terms are not negotiable. These terms are not subject to negotiation. If Gaddafi does not comply with the resolution, the international community will impose consequences, and the resolution will be enforced through military action. In this effort, the United States is prepared to act as part of an international coalition. American leadership is essential, but that does not mean acting alone. It means shaping the conditions for the international community to act together. Today, I authorize the armed forces of the United States to begin a limited military action in Libya in support of an international effort to protect Libyan civilians. That action has now begun. In this effort, the United States is acting with a broad coalition that is committed to enforcing United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973, which calls for the protection of the Libyan people. This is not an outcome that the United States or any of our partners sought. Even yesterday, the international community offered Muammar Gaddafi the opportunity to pursue an immediate ceasefire, one that stopped the violence against civilians and the advances of Gaddafi's forces. But despite the hollow words of his government, he has ignored that opportunity. His attacks on his own people have continued. His forces have been on the move. And the danger faced by the people of Libya has grown. But we cannot stand idly by when a tyrant tells his people that there will be no mercy, and his forces step up their assaults on cities like Benghazi and Misrata, where innocent men and women face brutality and death at the hands of their own government.
A Fox News alert. This is the very first video, and you can hear it as well. Tomahawk missiles fired from the USS Barry. So far, this is supportive action after the UN resolution of a no-fly zone, 1973, out of the United Nations Security Council, followed by the French having their fighter jets over Libya. Now these cruise missiles, believed to be 110 to 112 of them, launched against the sites, radar and aircraft target sites along the Libyan coast. And there you have it. A picture tells the story. The U.S. is involved.
Thank you for coming, everyone. As you know, we're on the leading edge of coalition military operations designed to enforce United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973 in Libya. The goals of these initial operations are essentially twofold. First, to prevent further attacks by regime forces on Libyan citizens and opposition groups, especially in and around Benghazi. And second, to degrade the regime's capability to resist the no-fly zone we are implementing under that United Nations resolution. To that end, earlier this afternoon, over 110 Tomahawk cruise missiles fired from both U.S. and British ships and submarines struck more than 20 integrated air defense systems and other air defense facilities ashore. On the slide to my left, you can see the rough locations of the military targets struck. You will notice that most of them are on or near the coast, a fact which made their destruction vital to the enforcement of a no-fly zone, since so much of the air activity we have seen and so much of the regime's military efforts have been in this part of the country. Well, it's another one.
who don't make them to beat them, defeat them and mistreat them. So what if that I'm cheating? Now everybody wanna sound grimy. Me, I'ma show you how, come on, all this together now. Yeah, ooh, yeah, yeah, that's how it gotta be. So stop trying to be loud as me, and you can do that. Think about the play and rush through that. With it automatic, I cut my ass against the line. The last bullet first on line. That's a step in the rest of the run. I got a weapon as well. Keep the brothers on fight, cause I'm topping up adrenaline, running like a chameleon. But by tonight, oh my god, I'm so high. Let they say I'm on, they say I look like a gremlin. But what does it take to make a kid, make a million children slam?
A tornado takes off from RAF Marham on a 3,000-mile round trip to Libya, its longest military operation since the Falklands War. As the planes made their way to the Libyan coast, Prime Minister David Cameron restated his belief that the UK's involvement is vital.
We have all seen the appalling brutality that Colonel Gaddafi has meted out against his own people. And far from introducing the ceasefire he spoke about, he has actually stepped up the attacks and the brutality that we can all see. So what we are doing is necessary, it is legal, and it is right.
The barrage from UN forces continued from air and sea, the US Navy firing Tomahawk missiles at strategic targets. Anti-aircraft guns fired in response to the UN aircraft over Tripoli. And Libyan dictator Colonel Gaddafi issued a defiant message on Libyan TV, calling the UN forces colonial crusaders and asking the world to unite against the West. The Libyan government claims 48 civilians have been killed with hundreds injured. They've released footage of people in hospitals in Tripoli, but there's no way of independently verifying the numbers or how they were wounded. Phase one of the UN operation is well underway, and Colonel Gaddafi appears to be digging in for a long resistance.
Strikes were carefully coordinated with our coalition partners. The targets themselves were selected based on our collective assessment that these sites either pose a direct threat to the coalition pilots or through use by the regime pose a direct threat to the people of Libya. Because it is night over there, it will be some time before we have a complete picture of the success of these strikes. I want to stress, however, that this is just the first phase of what will likely be a multi-phase military operation designed to enforce the United Nations resolution and deny the Libyan regime the ability to use force against its own people. This is an international military effort, urged by the Libyan people themselves and by other Arab nations. We are joined by several other allied partners and are committed to supporting their efforts. Indeed, we continue to receive commitments of support and participation in leadership from both Arab and European partners.
I'm the nitty nasty, gritty smash and never flow gapping. Sticky foot splash of the raspy rap smashing. That I provide, I abide the USG. Besides the gutter box, make me flip like Jekyll and Hyde. Of course, I come across with the pure, for sure. Unadulterated, uncut, raw, disgusting, busted. You wanna touch it, too hot, you forgot. You're not ready, your head to get busted. Hit between the eyes, I plan to hand a lot. I supply the static, run with the bad guy. The villain, good, top lighter than the finest. See the big black picture if you look at fight. My mind is graphic, expressive, drastic. Kill the copycat, I can't, it's all massive. Directed it, when y'all least expected it. And thought it was safe, I just hit you in the face.
The US and Britain fired cruise missiles at Libyan air defenses from warships and submarines in the Mediterranean Sea.
Over 110 Tomahawk cruise missiles fired from both US and British ships and submarines struck more than 20 integrated air defense systems and other air defense facilities ashore.
In a second wave later Saturday evening, three U.S. B-2 stealth bombers dropped 40 bombs on a Libyan airfield to destroy the country's air force. The operation, dubbed Odyssey Dawn, is part of an international campaign to enforce a no-fly zone to stop attacks by Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi against his own people.
We cannot stand idly by when a tyrant tells his people that there will be no mercy.
Earlier in the day, French fighter jets fired on and destroyed Libyan military vehicles in the rebel-held city of Benghazi in the eastern part of the country. The strikes came after an emergency summit of top officials from the U.S., Europe, and Arab countries attended by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in Paris. Gaddafi called Libyan state TV to say his country will defend itself against what he calls crusader aggression. He vowed to supply his citizens with weapons so they can retaliate. Libyan officials claimed the attacks hit civilians and killed dozens, including children, but that couldn't be verified. The no-fly zone was authorized by the United Nations Thursday, and Libya said it would comply. But since then, as Secretary Clinton put it, Gaddafi has defied the world, and his attacks on civilians go on. Before the Allied attacks began, Gaddafi sent planes, tanks, and troops into Benghazi. The Pentagon says the night assault on Libya is just the beginning of a multi-phase operation.
These are only terrorist actions, but those who will succeed are those who belong to the land. The one on the land is the one who will win the conflict. You are unjust. You are the aggressors. You are beasts. You are criminals. Your countries are against you. There are protests everywhere in Europe, everywhere in America, against the steps you're taking against the innocent Libyan people. The people are with us. Even your people are with us. All the people on earth are against you. You will fail like Hitler failed, Napoleon failed, Mussolini failed. All tyrants fall under the feet of the people. This is the era of the people and the great Gaddafi revolution. This is a new crusaders' war. You are trying to erase Islam, but Islam will never vanish. Islam will be stronger after today. The Libyan people will be stronger after today. The Libyan revolution will be stronger after today. All of the people are with us. We're raising the banner for the people who want freedom and peace. We raise the banner for people in Asia, Africa, Latin America, even in Europe. Your people are with us. All the Libyans are prepared to be martyred, but we will be victorious. You will die. And in my B-boy stance, hurry up and give me the microphone before I bust on my pants. The mad author of anguish, my language polluted. Onyx is heavyweight, it's still undisputed. It took the words right out of my mouth, I'm walking wild in my shoes. I've been so many dudes, I'm so used in a building. I'm so confused, God excuse me for a temple. I'm the inspiration of a whole generation. And unless you got 10 50 fingers, it's an imitation. A figment of your imagination. But wait, it gets worse. I'm not watered down, so I'm dying of thirst. Coming through with the scale.
I want to start by paying tribute to the bravery and courage of our troops that are in action over Libya. It is always one of the gravest decisions to send our troops into combat, but in our view it is the right thing to do, because we could not let this stand. We could not stand by as Colonel Gaddafi was murdering his own people. And we are acting to uphold the will of the international community, to uphold the values of the international community. That's why when I spoke to the Prime Minister last night, I said to him, I thought it was the right thing to do for Britain to participate in this action. And I will continue to support our troops in the days and weeks ahead. I think it's good now that the UN has passed its resolution. And I think it's right that we took swift action, given the scale of the threat that Colonel Gaddafi was mounting to the people of Benghazi and elsewhere. And clearly we will now have to look at the effects of the action that has happened overnight and proceed following that examination. I think we need to be clear that the UN mandate is to protect the Libyan people. This isn't a mandate for regime change. We do want to see Colonel Gaddafi go, but the UN mandate is very clear about this. And that is the basis on which we are acting, and it is right both for the cohesion of the international community and the upholding of international law that we continue to act on that basis. And that's something I know the Prime Minister himself agrees with. In
ليبيا ستمارس حق الدفاع عن النفس وفقا للمادة 51 من ميثاق الأمم.
Libya will defend itself according to Article 51 from the United Nations resolution. The targets, the sea and air targets, military and civilians, will be exposed to a real danger in the Mediterranean. So the Mediterranean and North Africa will become a real war zone because of this aggression and irresponsible act. And starting from now, all countries' interests in the region will be in danger because of this mad aggression, which is completely unjustified. We consider it a crusade of colonial aggression. This can lead to a new open crusade war. Brave Libyan people will confront this colonial crusader aggression. We call on the peoples and citizens of the Arab and Islamic nations, Latin America, Asia and Africa to stand by the heroic Libyan people to confront this aggression, which will only increase the Libyan people's strength, firmness and unity.
And there is a Sudanese saying that goes, "Wreak havoc upon your fellow man, but love and protect Mother Earth."
This is the Fact Zone. I'm Brooke Alvarez. Our top story tonight, Congress has passed a bill naming incomprehensible shouting the official language of the United States. After attracting the attention of several leaders in Washington last year, the initiative's political supporters argued for months that the nation should formally recognize incomprehensible shouting as the only truly American way to communicate.
I'm sick and tired of listening to people who say that Americans should not know what to know, and that's not what it is, what the policy is. The red-blooded American is what we have in this day and age.
But opponents say the legislation is unnecessary.
Everyone already knows that if you live in America, you have to know how to scream and holler while making absolutely no sense at all. This is just cheap political point scoring, and it's blatantly unfair to those who have come to our country from level-headed, polite societies.
The movement started in 2008 with a grassroots organization called Americans, We're Doing It Right, because we got it now, because who else, right? Come on! Under the new law, public school classes will only be taught in incomprehensible shouting, and government agencies will no longer offer translators to non-shouting speakers. In addition, a new test will be added to the naturalization process, whereby potential immigrants must prove they have a working knowledge of incomprehensible shouting before they're granted citizenship.
I do export-import, and many of my clients, they are American. I have to learn to say things like, "Shut up! Shut your goddamn mouth! Let me finish!" And, "Oh, you son of a bitch! Oh!"
The legislation still faces a potential veto from President Obama, who favors naming dulcet tones as the national language.
We'll be right back. hundreds of sky gazers across the world headed out outside on Saturday night to get a glimpse of the supermoon. In India, people gathered in the capital of New Delhi to witness the spectacle, whilst others in Washington took to the streets to gaze up at the sky and see the big moon. The natural phenomenon occurs when the moon comes very close to the Earth and appears bigger and brighter than normal.
It's amazing. I've never seen anything like that. It really looks like you can touch it.
Many astrologers have linked the Japan earthquake and subsequent tsunami to the closeness of the moon to the Earth. The phenomenon is occurring after 18 years and brings the moon in its elliptical orbit.
Extreme weather events are in the same family. It doesn't mean they all happen together, because the way the moon and the sun affect the two are different, but of course related. And I think the moon's perigee in terms of earthquakes is slightly overstated. What we have is solar effects and lunar modulation of those solar effects on the Earth, which gives you weather and earthquake triggers. And then in addition for earthquake triggers, we will have lunar tidal effects. And it is true, the lunar perigee will give a bigger crustal distortion, which can help trigger earthquakes. But to make them really happen, you also need the solar driver.
What you want?
of this, of course, was done legally by getting the sovereigns to, quote, agree to give up their own power. Nobody realized that's what they were really doing, of course. Once they were owned by the national corporate government, the USA, as it became known, could borrow from private banks and use the slave labor of its citizens as collateral. This is, of course, exactly what happened. The privately owned Federal Reserve was allowed to take over the entire country's monetary system in 1913 as the nation's central bank. The Federal Reserve began printing money out of nothing, usurping the right of a sovereign government to coin money or issue a fiat bestowing value on paper money. The government could have done this on its own, but instead they allowed a private bank to do it for them and agreed to pay face value plus interest for these, quote, Federal Reserve notes, which took the place of U.S. dollars. The government became so indebted to banks that it chose to, quote, hypothecate all of the property in America to these banks in order to secure more funding as part of House Joint Resolution 192, quote, to suspend the gold standard and abrogate the gold clause, signed in 1933. From that time forward, the basis of our own original legal and economic system, private property and the exchange of goods and services through gold and silver coin, was replaced. People were forced to turn in all of their gold to the government, and were given paper dollars printed by the Federal Reserve instead. Really, they were no longer allowed to exchange real property, and thus part of the legal basis of their sovereignty was subverted. The land beneath their feet, unbeknownst to them, had been given away to private banks. This is why people now have, quote, real estate instead of actual property. The word real, again, comes from the French word for king, and stems from feudal times, when all serfs were tenants on the king's land. We are in the same situation today. Many of us are paying a 30-year mortgage, paying three times the property's actual value, for something that technically belongs to the private banks that own our corporate government. And that corporate government thinks that it owns us too. America's legal system, formerly governed by English common law, became replaced with, quote, commercial code, and all activities of the human subjects are now governed as though we are corporate entities engaging in international commercial enterprise. Thus, civil rights were brought to the South in the 1960s, not by government finally recognizing the inherent sovereignty of the individual, regardless of race, sex, or property ownership, but by reinterpreting the Commerce Clause, governing interstate commercial activity, to apply to any activity which involves a product or service that has in any way, in whole or in part, been traded across state lines. Thus, schools using pencils or paper purchased from or manufactured from parts purchased in another state must submit to federal statutes, etc. Most of our federal laws are applied to the states using the Commerce Clause. Universal Commercial Code, first published in 1952, unifies the commerce laws of all of the 50 states in the U.S. It really stems from international trade treaties rooted in global maritime law, the law of the sea. In 1944, the Federal Reserve Ponzi scheme was essentially extended to the rest of the world at the barrel of a gun. Towards the end of World War II, when Europe and much of the world had been beaten into submission through years of combat, poor and desperate, 44 nations sent delegates to Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, to create an international monetary policy. The alleged rationale was that if all of these countries had their currencies linked, they couldn't afford to go to war in the future because it would be mutually destructive. They ended up deciding to make the U.S. dollar the reserve currency of the world. The central banks of other countries would be linked to the dollar and would hold at least a quarter of their reserves in U.S. dollars. This put the privately owned Federal Reserve essentially in charge of the whole global economy. The International Monetary Fund was created at this meeting. This is the corporate entity through which the currencies in the international system are linked. The IMF forces loans upon needy countries, and if they can't afford to make their interest payments on the IMF loans they've already got, the IMF loans them more money to make those payments. In exchange, of course, they demand complete control over the nation's economy. This, in conjunction with the activities of the World Trade Organization, also created at Bretton Woods, is largely responsible for turning the entire world into a giant slave labor camp that runs for the profit of a handful of banks and corporations. They dictate to all of the member countries what labor costs will be, what sort of exporting and resource development they will do, who will trade with whom, and at what price. If you wonder why all of the jobs and production have been exported overseas, bear in mind that the U.S. no longer has any control over its own trade policy. The IMF literally has a mathematical formula that they use to calculate what the optimal level of trade is for each country and for each commodity. They use this to, quote, balance the values of different currencies. And it has been their stated goal all along to try to balance the standard of living throughout the world so as to make currencies easier to control. Now let me give you a hint. They don't intend to bring other countries up to our standard of living. It's the other way around. So that is why, no matter who you elect, no matter how many letters you send and phone calls you make to your congressman, they will always pursue policies that inflate the dollar, suppress wages, and export production. Because we have no control over our monetary policy or our trade policy. Since the dollar is a global currency, the Fed considers the effects of their policies on global currency markets before it even thinks about how these policies affect the U.S. economy. Another thing we clearly have no control over since Bretton Woods is our foreign policy. The UN was created shortly after Bretton Woods. The intention when creating it was that there would no longer be such a thing as war. Coincidentally, the U.S. Congress hasn't officially declared war since World War II. Everything the USA has done since then has been an unofficial police action. Why? Because we can't declare war. We no longer have the authority to do that if we want to maintain participation in all of these foreign agreements that hamstring us. But your president and your Congress will never admit that to you. They want to maintain the illusion that we are still a sovereign country. Over time, just like the federal government, all of the state governments likewise became reincorporated as commercial entities operating for the benefit of their private owners. The same is true for almost all municipalities, such as cities, towns, and counties. This can be seen in their new corporate names, in all caps, and on their comprehensive annual financial reports, which reveal all of their investments, revenue streams, and bondholders. With Bretton Woods, the private USA corporation became subsumed into a global, private corporate structure. The owned slaves, the citizens, became pieces of merchandise, whose future human labor could be securitized and used as the basis for the formation of financial derivatives that the banks could speculate with. Each individual human resource product was identified with a corporate name in all caps and an account number, the Social Security number. This is what is known in common parlance as the straw man, a magical corporation created by the government that has the same name as you, but in all capital letters, and which the government asserts ownership of. If you recognize the straw man as being you, then you are under their control. So essentially our national government, our state governments, our municipalities, and we individual citizens have now been co-opted into a giant global corporate Frankenstein, controlled by private banks. And the center of the international banking industry has always been, and still is, the sovereign City of London Corporation. It is they who assert ownership over our persons and property. Although this may chap our hides to think about it this way, the truth is that we have all unwittingly agreed to it. By responding to summons and demands made by the corporate government to the straw man becomes reality. Just as would a homunculus, golem, or servitor the first time it responded to the uttering of the name its creator had given it. And by responding that way, the servitor or straw man places itself in subordination to whoever summons it. Using Federal Reserve notes, paying taxes, and receiving benefits from the government are all acts of subjugation. In a way, a good portion of what's accomplished with the creation of corporations, including governments, is separation of property from its actual owners in the eyes of the law, to shield them from taxes, regulation, and public scrutiny. Historically, monarchs and other sovereigns have used the magical power of their sovereignty to create imaginary realms or worlds in which things function by different rules, and then create a corporate entity to rule over it in his or her stead. Several tax havens have been created in the British Commonwealth using this process. The process was perfected in the late Middle Ages by the Knights Templar, the inventors of banking, who used the special sovereignty granted them by the Pope to turn all of their preceptories throughout Europe into such autonomous zones. So the real reason our government is now structured this way is to keep us from recognizing the illusion we are all locked into. It is a confusing maze that is meant to hypnotize you. As long as we all remain trapped in the illusion, our masters have magical power over us. But this can end if we all wake up. In conclusion, I would like to say that corporations are not inherently evil. It is an extension of the power given to the children of Adam to have dominion over the earth and the spirits, and to make contracts with whomever we choose. We have the right, as men, to form corporations, just as we have the right to create golems, servitors, and homunculi. But it is a severe perversion of the natural order for a privately owned corporation to take over an entire government and then take ownership of its citizens. We must not allow our personhood to be subsumed by corporate entities owned by others.
Moving and the sound is coming out.
time for tonight's Tool Time Award. A Kansas lawmaker is trying to deflect a few comments that he made about illegal immigrants that happened to be recorded on audio and then released to the media. Republican Virgil Peck was taking part in a meeting on Monday to discuss the problem of wild pigs running free in Kansas. Now, the state currently uses helicopters to shoot the pigs, and that's when Virgil Peck had this brilliant idea.
Looks like to me, if shooting these immigrating feral hogs works, maybe we have found a problem to our illegal immigration problem.
So Virgil thinks that shooting illegal immigrants from the air would solve the state's illegal immigration problem. Doesn't Virgil just sound like a really warm-hearted, nice person? I mean, personally, I think it's insane that a lawmaker would advocate in a hearing that shooting illegal immigrants from the air like wild boar would be a good idea. After this meeting, Virgil was asked about his comments, and you would think that he might want to apologize, but you would be wrong. Virgil said, "I was just speaking like a Southeast Kansas person." Really? Really? So everybody in Southeast Kansas is advocating for illegals to be killed like animals. Somehow, I doubt that the entire state is comprised of thoughtless xenophobics like you, Virgil. I choose to give Kansas a little bit more credit than that. But Virgil went on to say that his constituents are extremely upset with illegal immigration and that the state and federal government responses. Now, while that might be the case, giving anybody the idea that killing illegal immigrants is okay is stupid and it's dangerous. And as a lawmaker, you should know better.
Push coming in an op-ed piece the president wrote for the Arizona Daily Star just 2 months after the deadly shootings in Tucson, Arizona. Joining me now, Wayne LaPierre. He's the executive vice president and CEO of the National Rifle Association. Wayne, thank you so much for being back with us. What's your reaction to this?
Well, I mean, my basic reaction is if you want to start a dialogue, it really shouldn't be about guns. The dialogue really ought to be on bad people and madmen. Because unless we focus on that, we're never going to get to the point. We ought to be doing everything we can to take madmen and felons and drug dealers off the streets. Because you can pass all the gun laws you want, and unless you get them off the street, you're not going to make people safe.
The president comes out and says, look, I believe in the Second Amendment. And he says, and in fact, my administration has not curtailed the rights of gun owners. It has expanded them, including allow people to carry guns in national parks and wildlife refuges. And he talks about how, you know, that's thanks to him. And so folks like you who would suggest that he's not pro-Second Amendment have it dead wrong.
Well, I'll tell you this. All you have to do is look at Sotomayor and Kagan on the Supreme Court. And they're both in favor of gutting the Second Amendment. He uses the term settled law. That's what Sotomayor told Congress. She said it's an individual right, it's settled law. Well, it was settled until she got in the Supreme Court and voted to gut it. President Obama, during his before he announced for election, he was for handgun bans, semi-auto bans. He was for raising the excise tax on firearms and ammunition by 500%. And he has an administration that is embedded with people that have spent their lifetime trying to destroy this freedom.
Rolling Stone contributing editor Michael Hastings, who recently broke the story about the Army using PSYOPs propaganda on U.S. senators, was also there, and he made this observation. He said, "General Petraeus is giving us the Charlie Sheen counterinsurgency strategy, which is to give exclusive interviews to every major network and to keep saying we're winning and hope the public actually agrees with you."
Today, a bipartisan coalition of members of Congress have introduced a privileged resolution calling for a vote in this Congress to end the war in Afghanistan. More than 60% of the American people want us out of there. This war is already approaching a cost of $500 billion. We have Americans who are losing their jobs, their wages are being knocked down. We have Americans losing their homes, losing their retirement security. They can't send their schools, their kids to colleges they want, and we're spending all this money on a war that is a waste of time, money, blood, and treasure to try to prop up a corrupt regime in Afghanistan. Now, our occupation over there has fueled an insurgency. It's time for Congress to take its constitutional responsibilities under Article 1, Section 8. We haven't really done that with respect to Afghanistan. It's time for us to do that. Let's have an up or down vote. That's what this resolution is about. And I urge all members of Congress to consider supporting the privileged resolution that ends the war in Afghanistan. Thank you.
The time has come for America to hear the truth about this tragic war. Now, I've chosen to preach about the war in Vietnam today because I agree with Dante that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a period of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth of these words is beyond doubt. But the mission to which they call us is the most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. This reveals that millions have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Now, of course, one of the difficulties in speaking out today grows out of the fact that there are those who are seeking to equate dissent with disloyalty. It's a dark day in our nation when high-level authorities will seek to use every method to silence dissent. Something is happening and people are not going to be silent. The truth must be told. Persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my path. Why are you speaking about the war, Dr. King? Why are you joining the voices of dissent? Peace and civil rights don't mix, they say. And so this morning I speak to you on this issue because I am determined to take the gospel seriously. There is at the outset a very obvious and almost facile connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. Then came the build-up in Vietnam, and I watched the program broken as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor, so long as adventures like Vietnam continue to draw men and skills and money like some demonic, destructive suction tube. You may not know it, my friends, but it is estimated that we spend $500,000 to kill each enemy soldier, while we spend only $53 for each person classified as poor, and much of that $53 goes for salaries to people who are not poor. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. Perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Harlem. One, two, three,
like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. So we watch them in brutal solidarity burning the huts of a poor village. But we realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.